Okay, hi everybody. This is the Disability Guru with Dr. Michelle Hernandez, and we have a special guest today, Robert Gomez. Hey, Robert, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, yourself, Michelle.
Good, 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 good. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about where do you want to start? Like what you do so many things.
I'm kind of a jack of all trades. Well, right now I do a lot of business development in and out of Latin America, looking for startups, looking for funding here in the United States. I also do a little side marketing business for myself. But one of the things I like to do is travel and just eat really good.
And you just got back from Mexico, right?
Yeah, I just got back from Mexico earlier this week. I was in the state of Michoacán and the state of Jalisco, visiting family and friends.
And then didn't you go to Colombia when a few months ago?
I was in Medellín in Mexico City back in May of this year, 2019.
2019. And how was that? How was the accessibility and stuff?
Being in Latin America, being in an underdeveloped country, sometimes the accessibility and the getting around can be hard at times. Medellin was super surprising that the public transportation, the subway, the trams, all had the buses were all handicap accessible, had lifts to get in and out of, and not just that, but people are really friendly and ready to give a hand to help someone out.
So you're a wheelchair user, right? So you're
Right. So I was born with cerebral palsy, been in a wheelchair for all my life, and love traveling. So luckily, the wheelchair doesn't necessarily stop me. It does slow me down, but I find a way. If there's a will, there's a way.
And when you were younger, how did you kind of maneuver the traveling thing? Or when did you get like the traveling bug, and how did you accommodate
You know,
that?
when I was younger, I didn't travel as much. I did travel a few times in Mexico when I was younger. It was a little easier because I was smaller, a little lighter. My dad could carry me around. I had a little more movement and would use crutches. But now, I mean, I still use crutches and I still move around. But now, when I'm taking longer trips, I'm definitely confined to the wheelchair. I'm able to support myself, stand up and transfer into things. But when I was younger, I really didn't travel as much. I really started traveling when I was in college and since then.
Oh, okay. And so that's been a while now, right?
Right. I was over 10 years ago.
And then what college did you go to? Where did you study?
I did my undergrad at the University of Colorado at Boulder,
Okay.
and I have a master's in counseling and psychology from San Jose State.
Okay.
And then I have an MBA from LSU, Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge.
Oh, okay. And so how did that, as far as being disabled and a Latin male, how did the disability affect the you achieving your goals academically?
As an undergrad at first, all I had was a manual chair. I've had a manual chair for most of my life. And as an undergrad at the University of Colorado, the campus is massive. They get all four seasons. It's not like being in the Bay Area, so we definitely got all four seasons. So it's the first time I switched to a manual chair, I mean to an automatic chair, to get across campus within 10 to 15 minutes to make sure I would get to my class on time.
Wow.
Dealing with snow and ice was also something new. So it was challenging, but then you get used to it. Going back to the Latin male, it was definitely a culture shock for sure. Coming from the Bay Area, going to Boulder, Colorado, a predominantly mostly white campus, it was interesting. But you find a community and you get roots and you tie down and you really support each other. And if you start missing home, friends invite you over to eat good Mexican food or speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Listen to music that you grew up on. So it was a good support system that you had to go out and definitely find, but there was people out there.
Oh, so you had to be proactive, right? You had to.
Definitely had to be proactive and look for for people in your own community, because it's hard. It's hard finding a familiar face or a familiar sound. But once they're there, once you find them, they're there. Everyone becomes a second family. You know, I speak to those people. I graduated over 15 years ago, and I still speak to those undergrad, my friends that I made when I was an undergrad.
Wow, really? Yeah. Those are like lasting friendships, healthy relationships that are never going to, you're always going to remember and learn from. And I think it's mutual because they learn from you too, right?
Right, definitely. So it's good to see them. It's good to see them grow. Now they have families and they're doing their thing. So we catch up as much as we can.
And so, you want to talk about your marketing thing or your funding thing?
I've worked with small businesses, mainly Latino businesses, trying to help them get their online presence up and going. Sometimes they feel that traditional marketing or, advertising in a magazine is the quickest way or the fastest way. And often, nowadays, no one's looking at them. Latinos are the largest consumers of digital marketing, whether that's social media, whether that's online, podcasts. So I'm trying to help these small business owners invest on an online footprint. And sometimes it's like pulling teeth because they don't necessarily see the value of it. Mm-hmm. They think advertising in a magazine is good enough where no one watches magazines anymore. No one reads newspapers anymore.
Yeah.
And I try to educate them and show them that a small amount of dollars could guarantee you a reach to a targeted community, to a targeted zip code that you want, instead of blanketing the whole Bay Area or the state or the country.
Right. Which is what you taught me, which is very good. And then so you've been doing that for how long?
About 2 years now.
And you like it?
I enjoy it. I enjoy it. I enjoy working with these small businesses. I enjoy working still in the community. I worked for 10 years in mental health, working with at-risk communities, working with first-generation Spanish-speaking communities, and I'm still doing that now, mm-hmm. just in a different avenue, in a different space.
Right. And if we think about the topic, when I started my dissertation, it was originally on Latinos with disabilities. And I got like 3 years into it. And then my chair of my committee was like, yeah, no, we don't see your point here. And so like I had to change my dissertation at the last minute, which is ridiculously difficult. But I think it would be great if you can talk about what do you see right now as far as in our society, being a Latino and having a disability. Is it a good thing, or do you think there is still a lot that needs to be learned?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to be learned. Navigating these waters, it can be difficult, whether you're within your own Latino community, mm-hmm. or you're in mainstream community.
Mm-hmm.
Within your own community, I have tattoos, so people think of me, he's a gangbanger or an ex-gangbanger.
Exactly.
Not knowing that I've gone to school and I've done all these other things and then traveled and done a lot of cool things, so I got to fight those stereotypes as well. In the mainstream, trying to get a job, sometimes it's still very difficult. I might have the greatest resume. I might have a great resume that could get me a job somewhere. But sometimes, when you mark, what's your nationality? What's your ethnicity? Are you a veteran? Do you have a disability? Sometimes I leave when I check that I have a disability, I don't usually get a phone call back.
Yeah, no, that's true.
When I leave it blank or I say no, I do get the phone call.
That's true.
So those are the things that I've experienced personally, and they're just walking fine lines or treading, navigating these waters and trying to educate people also that, hey, give me a shot. I know I could do it. I just need the shot. I just need to be in front of someone.
Yeah, just being able to have the option and just be given a chance means so much. I went to a job interview Friday, and the funny thing was, like you said, I have a good resume, and I'm a doctor, and let me tell you, the place I interviewed wasn't accessible, had no ramp. And then when I was like, okay, we're not going to have this interview because I can't get in your building, they were like, yeah, sorry, but we just didn't expect this. And so much of me wanted to be like, what do you mean? What did you expect? It's like, why don't you just say, well, I didn't know you're going to be in a wheelchair.
And like you said, I've seen your resume. It's great. And people should be jumping out of their offices and to hand you a job, but it's difficult. It's not that, you know, you telling me that you showed up to an interview and you couldn't get in because it wasn't accessible. It's happened to me a few times.
See, that's why I'm like, we have to bridge the gap. We have to and I don't know what that looks like. So, which is why I reach out to people like you and my other guests. It's like, how can we do that? You know, so that we're not our age and still going through this.
Yeah, and it's surprising 2019 in the Bay Area that it happens, because this is where the ADA, the fight for the ADA was born and raised out of. So it's funny that you know, I've traveled in Latin America and had difficulties getting into places. I don't expect it to happen here.
Right. It's like, no, this is our home. They're going to totally support us. But actually, when we leave the areas, when people are more like, I feel open-minded, you know? When I went to Hawaii, like I told you, it's like people were like, no, we're going to help you. We're going to, you know, these are steps. It wasn't like, oh, sorry, you need to leave now. It was like, okay, where do I touch the wheelchair and how do we get you up these steps? Very solution-focused compared to here, where people will just walk on by you, you know, just pass you by. They don't.
Right. And the solution for that, I mean, it's too complex. I think, you know, if you let them know ahead of time that you're in a wheelchair, will they resend the interview?
Right. Yeah, didn't offer me another chance. They didn't, like, that's funny that you bring that up, because I was like, oh, yeah, they could have just said, well, we could go to Starbucks, or maybe we could.
Right. So why aren't they also finding solutions if they're wanting the best,
right,
the best of the best to hire someone who they want?
Yeah, exactly. So what's the highlight? Where are you going to travel to next? Like, what's on your bucket list as far as, like, getting out there and doing what you do?
I'm traveling again in at the end of September.
Okay.
I'll be gone for, I don't know, probably a month. I don't even have a return flight.
Oh, wow.
I'll be in Mexico, and I'm taking advantage. I'll be down there with my dad, just kind of getting away for a bit.
Okay.
Hanging out with him, and I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to also plan something to Australia. Maybe next year or Europe, but we'll see how things go.
And culturally speaking, how do you think in the Latin culture disability is viewed? Do you think it's changing in a more positive? I know for me, when I was growing up, it was like, oh, me, you know, like, pobrecita, you know, like, oh, my poor baby, she's disabled. And I feel like that can hinder us sometimes. But what was your experience growing up? Your parents kind of push you, or?
You know, my parents, I got to thank my mom and my dad and my brothers, because they never sugarcoated it. They told me at an early age that hey, this is your situation. No one owes you. No one owes you nothing. No one owes you jobs. You got to be able to do it for yourself. And although you might not have all the physical, you might not be able to do everything physically, nothing's wrong with you mentally. So you got to go out and do what you need to do and take care of yourself. And the world stops for no one. So luckily, they told me that at a very early age. That kind of pushed me to be more independent and pushed me to go further. Within the community, I got the pobrecito. The poor little guy or the poor kid that he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And they see someone in the wheelchair, and they also think, hey, it's mental also. It's not just physical. So they start slowing it starts speaking to you slower and dumbing things down. And when I go to, when I've gone to Mexico City, Guadalajara, these small towns, people in the only people I see in a wheelchair or crutches are begging in the streets. A lot of the people who I've seen with permanent disabilities, they're almost shunned, or they're, I don't want to say shunned necessarily, but they're almost protected so much that they're not allowed to live their life.
Right. Yeah.
So I understand where they're coming from, where parents are coming from, where they don't want anything to happen to their children, especially if they have a disability. But at the same time, what's going to happen when they're no longer there?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, what's going to happen? And just because you have a disability, I think it's really important for the listeners to know, is that it doesn't mean that you don't deserve to have a life, too. People correlate, oh, disabled, no life. You know, disabled, no this or no that, no kids or no relationship.
Disabled, no life, no relationships, no education, no fun, upset at the world, a chip on their shoulder. No, it's not like that. It's not like that.
Yeah, and I think that you're a good role model for, you know, for that, especially being a Latin and a male. Because I was thinking, as you were saying, how your parents raised you and stuff, it was like, you know, yeah, they did tell you at a young age, and you kind of, it was, you just automatically knew, like, okay, well, I'm going to have to stand up for myself. But when you're a Latina and have a disability, it's like, okay, just be nice, mija. You know, just don't make any waves. Don't cause any problems. Don't ask for any help. And I was like, well, how much of that is, you know, just because nobody's going to, I think, judge you harshly because you're being assertive. It's like, yeah, he's in a wheelchair and he's Latin, but you know what? He's doing it. You know, it's like, it's a compliment. It's like, yeah. And if at me, it's like, oh, wow. Well, wow, that's cute that she's a doctor, you know, like as if I didn't, you know, as if they just handed me a doctorate. Yeah.
As if your ideas or your words aren't validated.
Exactly. Validation. That is a key word. I want to talk a little bit about Design the Future. You want to talk about that, what we did at Stanford last month?
Yeah.
So how long have you been involved with Design the Future?
This is my second year, four total groups.
Mm-hmm.
Four groups in total.
You want to explain the program to the listeners a little bit?
Yes, but correct me if I'm wrong also, please.
Yeah.
So Design the Future is a program, and now it's starting to happen more nationally and at other universities. And what it does, it takes a peer partner who has a disability, and they work with a group of 4 to 5 high school kids and a mentor. And what these high school kids are trying to do is solve a problem that people with disabilities have on a regular day, on an everyday basis, using design thinking. But more than actually, I felt like more than the program is actually doing than just trying to help people with disabilities, it's really trying to show and shape these mm-hmm. young high school students' leadership and empathy for the future by showing them how to solve complex problems and within their community.
Yeah, and they're all great. I mean, how was your experience?
Great. I've done it, like I said, 4 times. It's been great every time I've done it.
Yeah, I did. This was my first year doing it. I know. I was just amazed at how mature and talented the groups of students are, and how much they were receptive to everything, you know, because everybody doesn't have the same disability, so everybody needs something made or modified differently. But it was an amazing process, and it was really good. I want to get Eric and Darrell on here and do a podcast on that, but I wanted to get your input because you were there and you support that vision, which I do too. I just didn't know that any of this was out there.
Right. And like you said, I think what you said earlier, a few seconds back, just that all disabilities aren't made the same, and everyone definitely has their own challenges on a regular basis. Something that might be easy for you might be difficult for me, and vice versa.
Right. Well, and people, I want to say that I don't think people should be afraid to have this open dialogue, because this communication is how we learn from each other. You know, I don't assume that I know your disability just because you're in a wheelchair and I'm in a wheelchair. Doesn't mean we're the same. And it doesn't mean that we have the same disability or, like you said, strengths and limitations. But when it comes to mainstream, or, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, all disabled people, you know, do this. And I'm just like, no, they don't. But if you want to think that way, and if it makes it, you feel better, okay, but that's not true. You know what I'm saying? Like earlier in the beginning, you're like, oh, yeah, I got tattoos. They think I'm a gangbanger, of course, because that's their assumption, but it's not true. It's not valid.
Right, definitely.
So, I just want to make sure we covered everything. And is there anything that you got coming up that you want to talk about?
No, not that I can think of right now. I'm thinking about right now is I got to go to the store because I'm about to have friends over later on for some carne asada. So
oh, my gosh, and you're making me jealous every time.
What's
I talk
your address?
To you.
I'll be right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly.
Redwood City, 10.
No, that's a good thing. So how did you both become involved in this Design the Future project? How do you reach out? How do you sign up? If you have a kid who's involved in science and engineering and they want to be part of this, how do they become involved?
I was part of BORP program, their cycling program out of Berkeley, and I think they do cycling 2 or 3 times a week, hand cycling, and that's the cycling. And I got an email about Design the Future, and I said, yeah, I'll definitely love to volunteer and participate with these kids. So that's how I got involved.
And is that an acronym?
Yeah, BORP is like Bay Area Outreach Recreational Program, right?
Well,
Did I get that right?
I believe so.
Ding, ding, ding.
I know.
Okay.
Something like that. And they're based out of Berkeley, and they do a lot of adaptive, whether it's cycling, sports.
Yeah, adaptive sports.
A lot of cool things with people with disabilities. And I definitely enjoyed it. And the reason I jumped on doing Design the Future is because it was in Palo Alto instead of having to go all the way to Berkeley.
Right.
So that's how I jumped on it. I believe they're always taking potential new project partners in. And Michelle, I don't know if you give out your email address or you could give out mine, and then we could just forward them over to Darrell.
Yeah, that's true.
For next year. Mm-hmm. And then from there they just fill out a simple questionnaire, and if they get accepted, they get accepted.
Yeah, it's cool. And then they call you and do an interview. And two, this is not just in the Bay Area. They do this at different...
They had them in Kansas, Louisville, and Boston, I believe, this year also.
Yeah. So they're growing, and they're doing a really good job. So I totally support that.
I had I'd come across a Facebook article recently about a mom who was innovative in creating a design that met the needs of her older child, and so is creating these types of seats in shopping carts, and that various chains have started picking up on having one or two handy. A woman who is caregiving for her elderly mother was able to use it. And I said, this is really interesting design. I'm really excited to share it. And somebody very aptly commented that, you know, it just seems so infantilizing for elders. And I thought, God, that's a really good point. Having said that, this solution worked for this family, and her point is taken that those with disabilities really need to have their own voices heard and be part of the design process, which, bingo, flashed me on the Design the Future program that you and Michelle participated in. So I'm ecstatic to hear that they are starting to do this nationally.
Definitely speaking to Darrell, I know he's growing it, and I had the opportunity to speak with him for about an hour in the afternoon, and it was, he's got big things. He's definitely thinking about big things. And like you said earlier about people with disabilities, that for them to find their voice and let them be heard, because oftentimes you're told, hey, be quiet, don't rock the boat.
Yeah. all the time, actually. It seems like we need a safe space just to vent. And I don't think that we have that enough in the disabled community. Everybody's doing their little niche, but none of us are getting together and being like, yeah, this sucks today. And I don't want people to say, oh, you know, of course you're depressed because you're disabled. It's like, no, you don't understand. One doesn't have to, everything to do with the other. It's just life, and it sucks, and there's always a problem. And, you know, wheelchairs are like, you know, they're mechanical. They break. I went to a Japanese festival, and I was leaving, and my freaking wheel just popped out. And I'm so, like, of course the wheelchair falls back, and I'm thinking, what the heck am I going to do? Because this is not going to work. And, you know, people were coming over and, oh, do you need help? And of course I had to say yes, because what am I going to do? I'm sitting in the chair. But at the same time, it was like, well, that was frustrating. And I wanted to talk about it with somebody that could get that, instead of saying, oh, like, well, that's terrible. Too bad for you. You know, it doesn't mean I'm clinically depressed. It just means I'm pissed off right now because I couldn't predict this, right?
Once you get it fixed, you're good to go again.
Yeah, exactly. And that is a whole process in itself. But so, yeah, do you have any similar experiences about just how people treat you, or you have a pretty good support network, it seems like? But
I have a good support network locally, thank God, and when I travel, I have my family as well, wherever, depending on where I go.
Okay.
But a similar story to what you just said, I was one day hanging out in New Orleans, and I hit a curve a little too hard. Maybe I had too many hurricanes on Bourbon Street. But the front fork broke off of the wheelchair. And I was with a friend, and the wheelchair was functioning. It wasn't great, but it was functioning enough on three wheels, and just being able to kind of lean back.
Yeah.
To roll to get to where I had to go to. So the next day, I mean, I was there visiting. The next day, we were luckily found a wheelchair place and was able to replace it.
Wow!
And the guy, no charge or no nothing. So I was able to get back on Bourbon again and keep on drinking those hurricanes for the rest of my vacation.
You're like, yep, I'm not wasting this time. Shit, I'm in New Orleans. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me, and I'll be in Redwood City looking for your carne asada sometime soon.
No problem. I'll expect you guys both this afternoon.
All right. Set a table for two more. Hey, I really appreciate your time today and your input. And Michelle is so awesome at finding her guests. So I'm kind of just back here being a fangirl, I think. I think this is a really good one.
No, thank you so much. Thank you so much for both you guys. You guys have a great rest of your Sunday.
You too.
All right. Thanks. Bye.